From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is the Gateway Podcast. It's Tuesday, March 10th. I'm Abby Larico. East-West Gateway, the Bi-State Area's Council of Governments, hopes an initiative to create an alignment plan for the St. Louis region will foster a common vision for the area.
In the 60 years that East-West Gateway has been around, we can't find where there's been any single effort to create a vision for what the St. Louis region should be.
Executive Director Jim Wild discusses the plan with STLPR's Kayvon Mansouri, coming up after this news. A bill introduced in St. Charles County last night would create a formal partnership between police and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This, as county leaders say, police there have worked with federal agencies for years to identify people who are undocumented. St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wembley reports the bill was put forth without any discussion.
The bill would allow police in St. Charles County to serve as liaisons for ICE if it passes at the next council meeting in 3 weeks. It's known as a 287G agreement, and there are more than 60 such agreements across the state. St. Charles County Council Chair Mike Elam says the contract will not take officers away from their regular duties.
This is not Minneapolis, and this is not county officers replacing ICE. Some of our officers will receive additional training, so they'll start understanding things a little bit more.
But experts warn the partnership could lead to racial profiling and unlawful arrests amid ICE enforcement nationwide. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
A former Missouri Speaker of the House is headed to prison for pandemic loan fraud. John Deal was sentenced to 21 months in prison and a $50,000 fine. He pleaded guilty last year to one count of wire fraud for misusing a portion of roughly $400,000 in COVID-19-era business loans. Deal admitted to using some of those funds for personal expenses, including country club dues, college tuition, and car and mortgage payments. Deal served in the Missouri House from 2009 through 2015. He resigned in 2015 after being caught sending sexually explicit texts to an intern. St. Louis County Executive Sam Page's criminal trial will not start later this month as scheduled. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Littman explains the outcome of yesterday's hearing.
Page faces two felony and two misdemeanor charges for allegedly spending public money to campaign against a 2025 ballot measure, giving the county council more power to fire department heads. His attorneys had been set to argue two attempts to have the charges thrown out. But both prosecutors and defense attorneys told Greene County Judge Katie Greenwade they were no longer ready to start jury selection on March 23rd as planned. Greenwade will now hear the motions to dismiss and address other legal matters later. The next hearing in the case is set for June. There is no new date for the trial. Page has pleaded not guilty. Both sides agreed last year to have the case moved from St. Louis County. In Springfield, Missouri, I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
An effort to abolish the death penalty in Missouri is gaining some traction. House committee members heard testimony yesterday on a bill to eliminate it as a sentencing option. Republican Representative Jim Murphy has sponsored legislation to abolish the death penalty for several years, but this is the first session in which it's gotten a hearing. If the bill passes, life imprisonment without parole would be the state's most serious sentence. Murphy says that would still be effective.
Putting them in jail for the rest of their lives without the possibility of parole is not letting them off easy, but it is better for the state and it's more just and it's certainly ethically, in my view, a better thing to do.
Murphy says Missouri should be pro-life for more than just abortion. He also cited more than 200 exonerations nationwide in the last 50 years as evidence that the death penalty can be issued mistakenly. Other proponents include St. Louis Archbishop Mitchell Rosansky. But the legislation did get strong opposition from some representatives, including Republican Barry Hovis.
To me as a victim, it makes no difference if they're mentally ill or mean or evil or whatever, if they kill me or kill my daughter or kill my wife or kill my neighbor. I have no regard for the people that do that.
The bill would not apply to people who have already received the death penalty, although Governor Mike Kehoe could commute their sentences. Missouri has one of the highest rates of capital punishment of the 27 states that still issue the sentence. Legislation making its way through the state house could make Missouri the second state in the country to establish a domestic violence offender registry. If a person is convicted of domestic violence and has been convicted at least once before, they would have to register as a persistent offender. The database would share their name, birth date, offense, conviction date, county of conviction, and photograph. Persistent offenders would also have to pay a $150 fee, part of which would go toward a domestic violence prevention fund. Republican Representative Ann Kelly co-sponsored the bill and says the fee will help the state continue to support domestic violence programs. That's especially if the legislature moves forward with Governor Kehoe's proposed funding cut to the Victims of Crime Act.
Just enable us to increase that fund up. And the grant system's already there, and it's ran through the prosecuting attorneys in local counties.
The bill passed unanimously in committee and now moves to the House floor. The Adams County Democratic Party chair says it's especially important for Illinois voters in rural areas, such as Quincy, to send their ballots in the mail by 5 p.m. today. Katie Daniels and other party officials say voters should send their votes at least 7 days ahead of time due to a change at the U.S. Postal Service under the Trump administration.
I know that our postal employees are working very hard. I see them out every day working very hard to get us our mail on time. But with these policy changes, it's really caused an issue with getting postmarks on your ballot.
The Postal Service amended a rule late last year that changes when mail is postmarked. Under the old system, USPS postmarked mail when it received it. Now it will postmark mail when it processes it. Illinois primary election day is March 17th. KIPP St. Louis is ending its lease with St. Louis Public Schools, which means nearly 800 students from two KIPP schools will be moving buildings. St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson has details.
Students at KIPP Victory and KIPP Inspire Academies will be relocating this fall. KIPP officials began discussing a long-term lease agreement with SLPS in 2024, but KIPP received a letter from SLPS in November stating they were no longer abiding by the existing lease. Natalie Henderson is CEO of KIPP St. Louis. She says the charter school wanted to work with SLPS to help provide stability for its students. Henderson says the students now will move to a co-location model.
We're not combining the schools. There will still be a KIPP Victory administrative team and teachers, as well as, you know, the KIPP Triumph leadership team and teachers.
KIPP Victory students will move to KIPP High School, and KIPP Inspire students will attend KIPP Triumph. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
East-West Gateway, the bi-state area's Council of Governments, kicked off an initiative to create a common vision for the St. Louis region. They'll do that by creating a regional alignment plan they hope builds a framework helping leaders from different sectors like government, the arts, and nonprofits work together. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri spoke with Jim Wild, the executive director of East-West Gateway, about what the plan might look like in practice.
The realization came during a board meeting, or a board retreat actually, in June of last year, that maybe we should look at trying to align all of those activities, align all the work in the economic development sector, align work in higher education, align work in workforce, in arts and entertainment, and just all the different sectors that are in play in St. Louis, and try to make it so that each of those sectors talk to themselves within their own boundaries, and then look at cross-sector communication. So how can each of those sectors support one another? And of course, how can those sectors accomplish what needs to be accomplished?
So this is a lot like, we have to start somewhere. This is starting the conversation to get to that place.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, we've had the conversations, but they just kind of die out, you know? And the idea of this a partnership for regional alignment, is to actually build into the process a sustainability component where the effort continues. And it's not East-West Gateway carrying this on into infinity. It's all of the players having ownership in their piece of the work, and carrying that through and establishing that, because long beyond the time that I'm here or other leaders in the region are here, we want to see this continue and make sure St. Louis is successful.
I want to talk to you a little about sort of like the nuts and bolts of this collaboration. As I had said earlier, you know, what will it take to sort of get things off the ground at the start, and then, you know, and then we kind of move into long term of what that might look like. But for now, you know, this request for proposal goes out, you find someone, and who would that be, I guess?
You know, I think it's going to have to be a team effort. We're going to have some national experts come in that have done this type of work, this visioning work. But we need to have some local members to the team to have an understanding of the lay of the land in St. Louis, to speed up that process in terms of this effort. For somebody to come in from outside of St. Louis and try to figure out who we are, it would be a pretty tremendous undertaking for some of them. So we're hoping to have the plan kicked off summer of this year. It'll be about an 18-month process. Initially, probably the first 6 months or so, is just engaging all of our partners and citizens in the region to figure out what that vision's going to be. And then we'd be working towards those other milestones for the remainder of the year or of the 18 months that we have scheduled.
And does that look like town halls? How do you envision sort of like meeting with the public on that?
Sure. I think it's going to be a combination of things. I mean, it's going to be town halls. It's going to be large events. It's going to be a lot of social media and virtual meetings. And some of this we're leaving up to the consultants to tell us what's worked for them in other places. We want to try some innovative things when we're doing this, but we want to make the whole process as accessible as possible for everybody in the region.
That was Jim Wild, Executive Director of the East-West Gateway Council of Governments, speaking with STLPR's Kayvon Mansouri. Our Brian Moline edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.